Hi, I'm Megan.
And I'm Sarah.
We're two moms with eight kids between us from preschool to teen.
This is the show where we help you feel better about the mom you are and share our own parenting tips and personal stories.
We're not experts. We're parents who've been there.
We're not perfect. We're real. Welcome to the Mom Hour. Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode 133 of the Mom Hour. I'm Sarah Powers, here as always with Megan Francis. Hey, Megan.
Hey, Sarah, what's up?
Not much. So we have a really fun show planned for you guys today, and it's kind of all centered around our segments that I've been doing with Katie for a year now. So Katie's been coming on the show. I can't believe it's been a year. It's been a little over a year since I met her on a park bench. and our listeners love this segment. So once a month, Katie comes on. It's always at the end of the show, and she shares a struggle, a discovery, and a success from her life in the trenches as a mom of a one-year-old and a three-year-old. But again, a year ago, it was like an infant and a toddler.
Right.
They are getting older, as
it happens.
And we hear so much from listeners how much you guys love this. And so we thought it'd be fun today. We're going to play a segment I did with Katie just the other day in the first part of the show. So in the first half of the show. And then Megan, you and I are going to kind of use that to bounce off and chat a little bit about, I don't know, how things change since we've been in Katie's position. I can't wait for you to weigh in on, because I always just talk to Katie, and then I know you're going to have so many thoughts on what we heard from Katie. And then you and I are going to share our own struggle, discovery, success from what's going on in our lives lately, because it is kind of a cool benchmark, I guess, for just what stage of life and motherhood are we in? And it's a good chance for reflection. So changing up sort of the order a little bit today, doing some fun things. And my segment with Katie's a little longer than usual. We got into a lot of detail about cleaning humidifiers. Spoiler alert. So we had a lot of fun.
You had a lot to say about that.
Okay, so first up, we are going to talk about Epic Books. We are welcoming Epic back as a sponsor of today's episode, and I can't wait to talk a little bit about Epic. So if you haven't heard us talk about them before, Epic is a huge digital library. So it's an app for any of your devices with more than 25,000 high-quality, popular children's books, but not only books, videos, quizzes, and articles, and more. And the books, there are ebooks to read, there are audiobooks to listen to, and then there are also read to me books where a voice actually reads the story.
I love that. I love that.
It's a little different than a traditional audiobook. These, the pages turn and the voice plays. And so my kids have all loved Epic. It's specifically geared for, I would say, preschool through sixth grade. And one of the things we've talked about that we love is everything is age appropriate up to about age 11 or 12. So kids can search around, search it up, whatever they're looking for.
Search up,
Search up what they're looking for. They can type in search terms for older kids who are interested in learning about something or looking up an author. Nothing's going to come up accidentally that's beyond an elementary school reading level. So I'm and I get really nervous about sort of letting my kids free to search up stuff. And so this is so nice because I know there's just nothing in there that would be inappropriate.
One really cool thing about this, oh, sorry, I totally cut you off, but I was going to say one really cool thing is if you've got a kid who's really into a series, those can get really expensive to purchase. And often the library will be like permanently out of one of the most essential books in the series. they'll have three copies of number two, but they won't have the first book or the third or whatever. So this is great for kids who are getting really into stuff and they don't want to wait either. It's like once they finish one, they want to jump right into the next one.
Exactly.
And this allows them to do that.
You don't even always know if this is a series they're going to be into for a hot second or like this is the long haul. And I love to buy physical books and this doesn't replace that. But when they're dabbling and kind of testing out the next thing they want to get into, my kids have also loved the nonfiction stuff that Epic has, the science books and stuff like that. So love that. There's no in-app purchases. And it's a great combination of, like I said, educational videos, articles, read to me books, audiobooks. So it's really fun. Very fun.
Yeah. One other little note. I know it's great to think that like our kids are always going to read just for the love of reading, but that is not always the case. And so they have these fun little badges and awards that pop up kind of, everything's kind of gamified. Even the schoolwork they do now is somewhat gamified in a way. And so it kind of fits in with that. And that really does, if you have a reluctant reader, that kind of thing can really encourage them to keep going. And sometimes they just have to read for a while before like it all sinks in and they decide they love it before they're hooked. It takes a little prep time sometimes. So
we all like a little badge that pops up and says, exactly. Hey, I read 20 pages.
I wish I had a badge that told me I was doing life, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you're doing life really well today. Congrats. But the other really cool thing is you can get 2 months free. And it's only $7.99 a month anyway, which is a fantastic deal. But you can get 2 months free if you use the promo code MOMHOUR. That's MOMHOUR.
Yes.
All caps.
And so I am going to pitch this as a great holiday gift idea. And here's how I think you could do it. Like, if you have grandparents who are asking what to get the kids, of course, the kids want something to open. And they're not going to be excited about necessarily a monthly subscription if they're 3 years old. They don't understand. But wouldn't it be cool to pair this with a couple of actual physical books that they could open on Christmas morning? But then also, if the grandparent is looking for something really meaningful that lasts all year, you can ask for an Epic Book subscription or help toward that. And like you said, Megan, 2 months are already free with promo code MOMHOUR. And I think that could be a really cool way to get the grandparents involved in getting kids reading in a way that helps your family all year round, but then gift a couple of physical storybooks or chapter books for the kid to open on Christmas morning. So I think that could be cute.
That's a great idea. Yep.
So again, it's getepic.com is the URL. MOMHOUR is the promo code. And we're just happy to have them back for the holiday season. Go check them out for sure. Okay, so Megan, we're going to play Katie's segment, which you have listened to, and then we're going to talk about it. Does that sound like a good plan?
I cannot wait. I'm really excited about this one.
Okay, everybody, so here's Katie and me. Hey, guys, I'm here with Katie. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Sarah. How's it going?
Good. Okay, so are you ready for this, Katie? We're doing our usual.
Yep.
Struggle, success, struggle, discovery, success.
Yes, a little SDS action.
All right, right now. And then I can't wait. Megan's going to be able to weigh in after this. And so we'll do some of our own. So.
I know. I love that. Like play-by-play commentary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Coming straight to you from Megan.
Exactly.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's start off with my struggle. This is a housekeeping struggle. And just for a little background context, I would say that if I were to chart my... how I spend my time on a normal day, normal week, I would probably say 50% of my time is spent on housekeeping duties.
That's really impressive. I'm a terrible housekeeper, so I feel like that's what it should be.
Well, maybe, but for how much time I spend, I feel like there is not equal proportion of evidence of that, which is my...
Well, you're probably like a thorough, conscientious home manager. I mean, you guys who listen to Megan and I talk about like cleaning our kitchens when we have people over, I mean, sanitizing cutting boards, these are things like you're supposed to do if you're a grown up. And I feel like I don't necessarily do them.
Well, I'm captivated by those conversations, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, people like to hear like how you do things in your house.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So my specific housekeeping struggle is cleaning those pesky humidifiers.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I was so excited when you told me this is what you were talking about because I have so many. Okay. Well, why don't you tell a little more before I weigh in? Like, what kind of humidifier and what are you currently trying to do?
Okay, so I will only allow my house to have one humidifier because they are clunky, ugly. I don't care how many blog posts I have seen about this is such a pretty cute humidifier. Add, this is a must add to your baby registry. They're all ugly.
Right.
So I perhaps maybe on the ugly spectrum have one of the uglier kinds.
Okay.
So mine is just a Vicks large.
I've probably had it because I've had like 30 humidifiers, but continue.
Okay. So I have had this same model twice because my first one broke after maybe a year or something. So basically, I feel that with little ones in the house, even though we're currently in the midst of cold and flu season, with little ones, you're kind of always on that in that season.
Totally.
Yeah. So it just kind of circulates from room to room. Whoever needs the humidifier most gets it.
Okay.
So whoever's coughing the hardest, loudest, longest, that's a kid. So they say that you're supposed to clean the humidifier, get this, daily.
Okay. Ain't nobody has time for that.
Who has time for that?
So I don't even clean my children daily, as we know.
So I do mine once a week, I would say.
Okay.
Twice a week on a really conscientious good week where I'm just killing it on the household stuff. But so ours specifically, and you know, other moms out there weigh in on this. are all of the, well, Sarah, I guess you represent all the moms of the world having had 30 humidifiers in your life.
Yeah.
But do all of the basins have so many grooves and nooks and crannies and tight little places that you have to squeeze in a Q-tip or whatever little device you're using to clean that?
I think they all do. Okay. I mean, but the question is, do all moms clean their humidifiers that thoroughly? And I know you're supposed to. I mean, we're talking about like moisture going into the air that our babies breathe. So I'm not de-emphasizing that. But I am also going to tell you that I never cleaned them that way. I also was so overwhelmed by cleaning instructions. Sometimes it's vinegar. Sometimes it's like, where did you get the information about how to clean yours?
I think I Googled it once. And to be honest, this is a confession. I sometimes will watch YouTube videos of women clean their houses. This is how into housekeeping I am. Because I'm like, ooh, what's your method? What's the solution you
use? I can actually see the appeal. While I wanted to cry laughing, that was really funny that you just said that. No, I do get the appeal because we all, it's something that, and we talked about, Megan and I talked about this just a couple weeks ago. And we talked about, we're not all like schooled in the ways of like how to do this.
And it's my virtual home ec. It
exactly,
really is.
Exactly. Yeah. So I totally get that. It's also kind of funny.
Yeah. So I use a vinegar water solution. I have not seen any techniques that are to the contrary of that.
Yeah. Vinegar is what I remember reading.
Okay. So I just, you know, if we're in a hurry, if we realize, oh, shoot, we haven't cleaned the humidifier in a week and he's probably breathing the opposite of the air that we're trying to get him to breathe. So we'll quickly do a well, when I say we, I mean I. I'll do a cursory clean and just dump out the water, pour in just a ton of vinegar and then like the rest with water, swish it around, dump it out. But what happens is a light pink sort of film will develop. And so then I get in with a scrub brush, but no scrub brush, whether it's a sponge or even the tiniest of brushes. I've now resorted to a straw brush, an OXO long, twisty, flexible wire to get into those grooves and nooks and crannies. But then a sort of calcium deposit also builds up. And that I have not been able to tackle.
Well, and in theory, that's in our water probably, right?
Well, we have a water softener. So we have soft water. Yeah. But I think even with that, I think there's
some naturally occurring minerals.
Yes.
Okay. So I'll tell you my approach, which was basically to get a new humidifier.
Okay. Condemn the old humidifier.
No. So my babies were all in Arizona where it's super dry all year round. So you really almost, it was pretty normal to have a humidifier going for babies and
in
young
every
toddlers.
Room, all the time.
Not necessarily in every room. I feel like it was usually the baby. Like, you know, unless my older child was sick, it was usually in the baby's room.
Wow.
Now your kids are closer together than mine. So if I had, you know, a 1 and a 2-year-old, I don't know that I think a couple times I owned 2 humidifiers, usually just one, was not as diligent about cleaning, much more of a like rinse out, wipe down. I don't know if I did the vinegar ever, Katie. I mean,
well, what did you wipe it down with?
Just like paper towel? Like rinse the water out really well, like a clean rag.
Yes.
Like just making sure that it was starting fresh with really clean water, that it was drying completely once in a while.
Right.
But again, you're using them all the time. I had several humidifiers break. I agree with you. I feel like they're always around $40. It doesn't matter if it's like the best one on the market or the cheapest one. There doesn't seem to be a huge amount of difference.
No, they're all Cool Mist humidifiers.
Yeah, exactly. And so I went through a ton. We should link up if you have one that you like right now. And I'll probably think of a couple that I liked. But one time I have one.
30. I'm sure she has at least one or two.
Really, like whichever one was on the shelf at Target or Walgreens I had a sick baby. But I have one actual funny story about this. Early on in my humidifier days, I figured, so Allegra must have been 6 months to a year. I had one baby. She probably didn't have a cold. I probably didn't own one before that. She was my healthiest baby, so she didn't have colds.
Oh, okay.
She was born in the late spring, so she had a whole summer season.
Golden
so it would have
age.
Been, yeah. So it would have been like that first winter, and she probably had a cold. The doctor probably told me to get one. So I figured that like bottle parts and pump parts that you could boil or have really hot water to sterilize, which seems like a good piece of logic, right?
Yeah.
Because there's plastic,
right?
That that like pump parts and bottle parts that you can actually boil to sterilize or steam.
Right.
So I put all my humidifier parts in a pot of boiling water and they all melted.
Oh, no.
Or like not totally, but like, in fact, it was almost not noticeable. It was like, great. They boiled, like super sterilized. I got them out. I air dried them. And like, I went to put it back together. I'm like, oh, it doesn't fit. And it's because everything was like slightly warped.
Partially disfigured.
I did not clearly watch YouTube videos on how to do that. I just tossed everything. So that quickly went from my first to my second humidifier.
Oh, my
God. It was ruined. I mean, it didn't, the plastic, like, the parts didn't fit together because I
boiled
them.
See, that's one of those lessons, trial and error. You know, it's not like you, during adolescence, your mom sits you down and says, okay, Sarah, here is a piece of knowledge.
I just don't feel very confident in the, like those types of cleaning projects in general. You're probably doing like a really good job because you're at least following some instructions and your humidifiers are cleaner than mine ever were. And don't be afraid to just throw it away and get a new one.
Okay.
Because sometimes honestly, the reason was I felt like it was kind of gross. So I would get a new one. Often it was because it broke, or like if we hadn't used it in a few months, I'd get it out and then it would kind of gross me out.
Yeah.
And so like instead of cleaning it, I would just buy a new one. There you go. Friends, take that home with
you. Well, I like that technique. Can I just ask one last question? Okay. One of the biggest problems is the fact that the basin where you put the canister on top
I know what you mean.
The cord is connected.
Yeah.
And so you can't submerge that.
Correct.
So that's a problem because water's splattering everywhere.
Yeah.
Kyle's in the background telling me, like, don't you know you shouldn't have cords in the sink?
Right.
And
I would be careful around, the water. I would probably more make sure, like, get in there with your scrubber or whatever, but then also make sure it dries really well. I think I think that's more important than anything because the bacteria lives in moisture, right? So as long as it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Do not listen to me.
My husband works for the electric company and I just have him plug it in after I'm done cleaning it. No, it's okay, you guys. He's really not in danger.
The other thing is that all of my kids lived through their baby and toddler cold and flu seasons with potentially
bad
humidifier
air.
Germs bad piped air. Into their lungs every night. Yeah. So there you go.
Okay.
Whatever you're doing is probably okay.
They survived. They all breathe fine now.
They're good.
Okay. Well, let's move on to my discovery.
Okay.
So this discovery is that this little bit of wisdom that I learned from a mom that I actually taught two of her four children in high school English. She had two sets of twins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I saw both sets of twins go through school, but I actually taught the lower two.
Okay.
And two twin girls, the older set was fraternal. Anyway, she volunteered for the PTA. So we were having a conversation in the teacher's lounge. She was kind of always around the campus. And she told me, she said, you know, you're only ever as happy as your least happy child.
Yep.
And I was just kind of pondering that today and the truth of it starting from just really out the gate because, you know, these little things that come into our lives are kind of these metaphorical emotional thermostats and kind of set the emotional tone of your day, your weeks, your months, and then eventually your life. And I would imagine, and you can attest to this, I'm sure Megan, more so with adolescence, because, you know, from what I hear, as your kids get older, there's just more sort of emotional baggage. And and that's, I think, what weighs more heavily than like the physical demands of mothering.
Yes. Motherhood gets less physically demanding for sure. More complex emotionally.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I can see that applying to so many things, too. I was also thinking you're only as happy as I'm going to mess this up, but like the kid that you're the least worried about. Like, I feel like when you have multiple kids, there's always one that's going through something that's just kind of like nagging on your brain. It's either behavioral or it's health, you know.
Right.
So even if that kid is happy, you're only as calm as like the kid causing you the least amount of worry. Does that make sense? Like that underlying, and that's less about happiness and more about like kind of keeping your ducks in a row, like physically. There's always like one kid going through something that's kind of weighing on you in a way. The other thing I will say, and I'm sure Megan will chime in on this too, is I do think we get better with practice about choosing our state of happiness or calmness regardless of what's going on with our kids. And that just takes a lot of time. When you're physically around your kids all the time, and right. their physical unhappiness or their physical needs are like in your face screaming.
Oh, then completely.
Yeah, like your life is a direct reflection of that. You're the squeakiest wheel.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And just like imagine the volatility. It's like more yeah. volatile than the stock market on its worst
right.
day.
Right. And so there's no way. Well, I shouldn't say there's no way. Separating yourself from that, detaching, if you will, is pretty hard when it's like physically your full-time job all the time. But as your kids are separated from you more, you spend more time away from them. And I think as you just get more practiced, I do think you're never going to separate from it completely. But I do think that moms in a healthy headspace are able to sort of be happy or find their happiness regardless of the least happy child. So that's another maybe spin to put on it too.
Right. But yeah. No, I like that. I absolutely like that. And theoretically, I think that's where all moms strive to be, yeah. want to be.
Right.
But I think maybe in practice and in application, there's yeah. a yeah. bigger disconnect
no,
maybe
totally.
Than we'd like to
no,
believe.
No, oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't think anybody can completely separate from that.
Right.
But I do think that's really wise. I feel like I had heard that before too. And the thing is, with multiple kids, the more kids you have, the more likely that oh, somebody's unhappy
I
or
know.
Unhealthy or like going through some kind of transition.
Right.
So
I know. So Megan, accepting wow, that, five.
Yeah. Accepting that is a big part of just being able to deal with it. I think.
Right.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. So to end, I will end on a successful note. And that is Luke, though he has dropped down to one nap, which is kind of sad, but napping is a struggle in his life.
Yeah.
Just
so maybe it'll
always.
Be easier. Yeah.
I think so. I mean, now yeah. he really has not protested naps at
yeah.
all for the last couple months when he dropped down to one nap, but he has begun transferring asleep from the car into his crib, which he's never done that. I've never actually had a child transfer
yeah.
well. Annalie never transferred. If she fell asleep in the car, I was doomed. She was either going to wake up right when we got home mm-hmm. or she was going to nap in her car seat maybe slightly longer. And mm-hmm. I just was kind of handcuffed to my mm-hmm. car. But it just kind of lifts the burden of needing to like crank up the volume.
Mm-hmm.
of the radio mm-hmm. or start screaming at mm-hmm. Annalie, can you please play with Luke?
Yeah.
Can you get his attention?
Oh, yeah.
You know, to try
yeah,
and stir
preventing,
him.
Preventing the nap. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So as long as he doesn't exceed, I would say if he exceeds 15 minutes
okay.
asleep in the car, then he probably
right.
won't transfer.
Yeah.
So what about you and
yeah.
your
no,
napping
I,
days?
Yeah. So I feel like with my first two kids, I was so afraid that they weren't going to transfer. Probably got burned a couple of times. It only takes a couple of times where
oh, to
like,
traumatize
you're
you.
Counting on that hour and a half nap and they wake up after 10 minutes in the car and they're like, nope, I'm good. Thanks.
Right.
That was an awesome nap. What do you mean I didn't nap?
I
totally
power,
napped.
Like, power nap.
So I think I just stopped trying. And I was home, especially when I had like your stage, like two napping, like a napping toddler and a baby. I was home a lot and I just structured my life around making sure I didn't have to do that, including keeping a baby awake and, you know, not being in the car at
right.
certain tricky times.
Right.
Third child didn't really have a choice, but she
right.
was the best transfer. And that's
oh.
probably because I just got it figured out and I
right.
figured out that she would. So I have a couple ways that I did transfers. When she was tiny and like in the infant car seat that would snap out.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've even talked about this on a show before, but I'll repeat it. When I would leave the house, we had a downstairs bathroom with a pretty noisy ceiling fan or, you know, air fan. And so before I left the house, I would turn most of the lights off, which I would do anyway, and turn the fan on in that bathroom because it was right inside the garage door.
White noise.
Yes, white noise. And I would pre-do the white noise before I left so that when I came home and she was in the infant car seat, I could take the whole car seat, and this may not even count as a transfer because she stayed in it, but it's still transfer from the car.
Oh, yeah.
Into the house.
Door
and I would
shutting
make,
and
yeah, I
opening.
Would, and lights like coming
yeah.
on, and I would make the big kids stay in the car. They were safe. They were in the garage. Like,
yeah.
they were right there. So they'd stay put, and I would take that infant car
yes.
seat, right, slip in the garage door and into this dark bathroom where the fan was already going.
Oh, beautiful.
And that was genius. And just set the infant car seat down and the fan was loud enough that then I didn't worry about the noise of the rest of us coming in the house.
Yes.
And sometimes at that stage, it only bought me another 30 minutes or whatever. But because she was probably on two naps a day. Like that was when she was like an infant.
Yeah.
And then later, she was a really good transfer from the car to her crib. And her crib is upstairs. So that means I was carrying
yep.
a toddler,
yep.
you know, in from the car. And one thing that was funny was 1 year Reed was in preschool. So he would have been four. She was like 1.5. It was the year we moved here to California. And she would always want to fall asleep on the way to get him at preschool. I want to say I picked him up at 12:15. So she was one nap. And so I did not want her to fall asleep on the way to preschool because then I had to go in.
Absolutely.
So I had to
not.
Go in and get her, wait for him,
right.
Get everybody back in the car. Even if she stayed asleep that whole time, it would have meant that by the time we got home, 30, 40 minutes would
nap
have passed.
Over, yeah. Yeah.
So on the way to school, it was all bells and whistles, like, do not fall asleep.
Feed her. Start yeah. feeding her. Yeah.
Throwing French fries in the yeah. back. And then we'd get him, and then I would actually want her to go to sleep because
right.
that transfer then started the nap. And actually, we had, like, I had another kid to pick up a couple hours later, so I actually wanted her to, like, go ahead and get started on the nap. So that entire year was like, don't fall asleep. Okay, fall asleep now. Transfer. Okay. Oh, and then there was a reverse transfer because we only had, like, 1.5 hours at home. Anyone with 3 little kids, there you will go through a phase where you have a baby, a napping baby, a preschooler, and an elementary schooler.
Oh,
and it is probably one of the most challenging. So then we'd be home for the nap, and then often she would still be asleep. She was my best napper, my worst nighttime sleeper, but my best napper. She'd still be asleep. It'd be 2 o'clock and time to go
Ugh.
Pick up the first grader. So I would reverse transfer, go upstairs. I'd get Reed in the car, get everything all ready, go upstairs, bring her sleeping down, put her in her car seat. And sometimes she would even continue to stay asleep and kind of like wake up at some point along the pickup.
Okay, ride. Wow.
And I did that 3 days a week for whatever, a school year.
Wow, that's yeah. like a gold medalist.
It was.
Okay.
It was.
Reverse
okay,
transfer? That's amazing.
I have one more thing to talk about with transfers because, I was always super paranoid. I'm sure Megan's laughing listening to us in this because her kids just fell asleep where they fell asleep and you put right. them somewhere and it's fine. But I'm kind of just as paranoid about, like, my kids can stay up late now. We can go out to a party. We can travel. It's, like, super easy. But I do kind of have a fear of, like, there have been a few times where it's like an airplane, like if we're going to fly somewhere and get in really late mm-hmm. and drive, I still kind of have a fear of, like, if they had to fall asleep in a car at, say, 10 o'clock at night or whatever.
Yeah.
And we got to our destination.
Oh, yeah.
Would they wake up and just want to be
all
up
night
all night?
Party.
I don't think they would, but it's almost like it never goes away. We're like,
oh, no.
What if they don't sleep?
Oh, well, the fear of yeah. sleep deprivation just kind
yeah,
of
it's
rules.
Burned into you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah. That's awesome. Okay, well, this has been really fun.
So fun.
Yeah, we'll link to humidifiers in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
Listeners, keep on listening. Megan's going to come back with me, and we're going to sort of talk about these things, how some of these things have changed. Megan, I'm sure we'll add some more thoughts. And then Megan and I are going to share our own struggle, discovery, and success from our stages of life.
Yay, so, I'm so excited for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we will be back with Megan in just a second. Katie, thanks for being here.
Thanks.
Okay, so I'm back with Megan, and we're going to chat about everything we just heard from Katie, which will be really
I
fun.
I can't wait. I have so much to say, and yet so little to say about humidifiers.
I know. I feel that maybe everything has been said, although you know I'm going to ask you. You know I'm going to ask you about humidifiers.
I know. It's
okay.
fine.
But before we do that, we're going to talk real quick about Warby Parker. Megan, you have tried their glasses frames. Tell me about it.
I have. I love it. Okay. So first of all, I've seen Warby Parker popping up like on my Facebook feed for a while now. And I love their style. They're always like those like kind of chunky, like nerd hipster style that I love. But I hate shopping for glasses. So one of the reasons I usually stick with contacts is I feel like every time I go to the optometrist, I look at the lens or at the frames and they cost $1 zillion. And then it's so much pressure to like try them on in the store and look in that teeny mirror and you don't know if it looks good on you and you get
yeah,
all
you
freaked
out.
Might
be having a bad hair day.
Yeah, exactly. And like it's not natural lighting. It's I don't know. It's just like way too much pressure. So what I love about Warby Parker is it allows you to try on 5 pair of frames for free. So they send you 5 frames that you pick out and you get 5 days to try them on. And you can, like, take them to your friend's house. I tried them on in front of my brother because he'll laugh at me if they look bad.
Nice.
Like, stuff like that. And you get time to decide which, not only which look the best on you, but what are the most comfortable. Like, I don't know about you, but sometimes you don't wear glasses, I don't think. But, like, if they're not the right fit for your face, like the right material, like they might slip or whatever.
Right.
So it's just, like, everyone has a very specific idea about what they like in glasses. So you get to try them on. Then they give you a prepaid return shipping label. You can send them back.
Nice.
And then when you're ready to order, the glasses start at $95. And that includes the lenses, prescription
wow.
lenses, with the anti-glare and anti-scratch coating. So that's an amazing deal. You cannot do better than that, just like walking in to a vision center.
Yeah.
And it's like so convenient. You really get to just do it in your own time, in your own way, without making an appointment. It's awesome.
That is, I can really see the benefit to just being in your own environment. I mean, glasses are like an intimate thing on your face.
Yes.
And to have to make a snap decision when you're in the store versus being able to try them on with, you know, the regular clothes you wear and in your regular environment. That's great.
Yep, absolutely.
What I love is for every pair you buy, a pair is distributed to someone in need. So love that
really
social
cool.
good aspect of the brand. So another thing I wanted to point out to our listeners is once you have gone to the link we're going to give you in just a second and ordered your free home try-on program, after that, go ahead and download the iTunes app, the Warby Parker app. It has a bunch of cool features, including if you have a new iPhone 10, in which case I am jealous, it uses the awesome new camera, the True Depth camera, to map and measure facial features. And so you can actually find your fit using that really cool aspect of the camera, and they will recommend one of the best fits for you. So that's really
cool. Really cool, because if you like, I've got a really narrow face and it can be really tricky to find glasses that fit well, but then aren't like too small, like my, you know, like I have a kid's head or something. So that's like that's a really cool feature that I would probably use. If I had an iPhone X, maybe one day.
Okay, so if you guys are ready to get your five pairs to try on at home, the URL is warbyparker.com/themomhour, and Warby Parker's warbyparker.com/themomhour, and get started with that free home try on. Go do it.
Yay.
All right. Okay, so I feel a little bit like we're going to be picking apart what Katie said, but we're not. We're just continuing the conversation.
Continuing the conversation, yes.
Yeah, and I want to get kind of your insight, because one of the things about Katie and my segments is they're always sort of new mom focused, and I'm kind of
right.
the one in the middle, and you have the perspective of 20 years of motherhood.
So I had to laugh really pretty hard when I was listening to your humidifier section, which I want to say went on for like 10 minutes, maybe 7.
It
was long. There were so many details about humidifiers, and it's funny because I have not owned a humidifier in a while. For whatever reason, the house we live in currently, it doesn't get super dry, and I'm very sensitive to that, and it's just not really, really dry. I think we have one kicking around that I pull out when people have colds and stuff, but I haven't been in the market for a new one in a while. So it really hasn't been a thing for me recently, but I remember investing heavily in humidifiers, not only buying them. I had several when the kids were little, but also just like the search for the perfect humidifier.
Right.
So I do get that aspect of it. However, I don't remember anything about cleaning them at all.
And you are clean. You do not like, I mean, you like to clean and sanitize things.
I do like to clean.
As you know from recent discussions.
Yeah. No, I'm not right. I'm not against cleaning at all.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever using like a vinegar and water solution. So my guess is when I bought it, I promptly recycled the box and tossed the use and care guidelines into a drawer, never to be seen again. And I probably just looked at it and made guesses. And I do have this memory of actually taking my humidifier apart and putting the bowl, you know, whatever you'd call the container, the base, in the dishwasher. Because to me, when in doubt, just put it in the dishwasher on sanitize, and that takes care of most things. And then I feel like as long as it's dry, like thoroughly dry afterward, you're going to avoid bacteria and mold. And so I think that's just my approach to like everything. And I'm guessing, unless it looked gunky around the mechanism part, I probably didn't clean it.
No, I didn't either. But I thought one thing that came up that I thought was really interesting was Katie saying how much she uses YouTube to get these techniques. And at first, of course, I wanted to kind of laugh because it just was not something I would think to do. But again, that I think is a sort of age generation thing. And then the more I thought about it, the more I realized when you and I were blogging at The Happiest Home, people were absolutely interested in very specific details of how not just cleaning, but how we manage our homes down to the little details. And there's something very satisfying about peeking behind the curtain. So while, of course, I wanted to poke fun at Katie watching YouTube videos of women cleaning their homes. Number one, I'm sure she's not alone. She's a few years younger than we are. And that's a YouTube generation thing. But number two, that's not new, because people have always been wanting to know how other people clean.
Do things.
And the most mundane details of home life are sort of interesting in a way. So
they are, and I could see how that – I'm not a video – I don't go to video content for learning. Like, that's my last case scenario usually, and I think that's because I'm an early internet adopter, and so I always saw the internet as a text-based sort of, I don't know, medium, and it took me a long time to get used to even visuals on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, I'm I'm kind of slow to adapt sometimes. Well, but no, I totally agree.
I feel like watching, for me, searching something up and watching a video is like a bigger commitment. Like if I can skim something really quick with my eyes and see if it has what I need, whereas if I have to load something and push play, I don't know.
Don't what you get really frustrated me. Sometimes when someone's demonstrating? You're like, yeah, I got it. Move on. Like,
right, get to the
but
part.
Then you don't want to, you don't want to take the little slider and move it, because what if you move too far?
Right. You don't know what's happening.
Yeah. You don't know what's happening.
What's happening? Okay. Yeah. So Katie also shared her discovery was you're only as happy as your least happy kid. And then we also talked about car nap transfers. Anything?
Oh, wait. I want to circle back to one thing really quick.
Oh, we're still in humidifiers.
We're still in humidifiers. No. Katie mentioned at the very beginning of that she spends about half her time doing housework. And at first I was like, well, that's a lot. But then I thought about it. For me, that would be a lot now. But like, so much of when you have a little kid, you know, like I'm going to say 5 and under.
Yeah.
So much of housekeeping is actually like parenting. It's
right.
just another part of parenting. So
or it's like person keeping because right. the people can't keep track of themselves.
Like, you know, there's care. High chairs to yeah. clean and there's toys all over the floor and yeah. there's clothes that need to always be like, you know, there's more clothes to wash because kids are pooping in themselves. And so I just think like, I think for myself, I probably do more housework than I'm aware of because I think I go on autopilot a lot yeah. and then I don't even know that I've done stuff sometimes. Like I'm sitting on a made bed right now and I have no idea how it got made, which is a little weird. But so that happens. But also I think when you're a mom of little ones, like parenting and housekeeping are just the same thing.
Yes.
And so I could totally see how
yeah, and there's a lot of more physical demands that are yeah. right in that, like you said, the overlap area between taking care of the small humans and
right.
taking care of your home. It's all intermingled.
Yeah, and well, it's kind of – it extends to, like, food even. Like, right now,
yeah.
I only see making dinner as parenting.
Yeah.
Because my kids, like, get their own snacks and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like – you know, when they were little, every single meal they ate was parenting.
Yes.
Because they couldn't get it for themselves. So.
Right. Yeah. No, I think, and then maybe hopefully that gives people who feel like they're just doing a lot of mundane household tasks a little light at the end of the tunnel. Because your kids help out a lot also. And
yeah.
they do a lot of, you know, they help with a lot of the housework as well. Katie also has a beautiful home. And I know she takes a lot of pride in a lot of those jobs. So it's also possible she's doing more than maybe some people who
than us not, what
yeah than us than me. Katie's been in my house like a million times, so I've let go of any pretense for me, but yes, it's all good. Okay, and then yeah, what else did we talk about that you wanted to comment on?
Oh, well, I wanted to comment on both of the other things. So
okay.
just really briefly, you had that conversation about only being as happy as your unhappiest kid, and
yeah.
I see the truth in that in some regards. Like if you have a child who's really going through some stuff, that I could see being true, like because that becomes like a constant day-to-day drag or just a need that needs to be met. And
yeah.
those are the times that I don't feel bad at all about putting more resources or time into that kid who
mm-hmm.
needs that, because I feel like it like a rising tide lifts all boats. Like I feel mm-hmm. like then everybody benefits from that. But overall, I'm in my house right now. All 5 of my kids are in my house. I don't know who's happy right now. I just don't. I mean, first of all, they might not even tell me if they're happy
yeah.
or not. I might not find out until later. And they keep things to themselves more the older they get.
Yeah.
And then if I allowed my happiness to match the unhappiest kid in the house with 5 kids, I would be a wreck all the time.
Yeah.
Because someone's always mad or unhappy about
yeah.
something.
So,
yeah, I think that there's it's one of those sayings that's kind of like a cliche that has a nugget of truth to it,
mm-hmm.
but the reality is so much more complex, which
yeah.
is pretty much every cliche in
yeah.
proverb, right?
Yeah.
yeah.
No, and I
yeah.
think the way Katie and I framed it too is like it is true in its simplest form when your babies are really tiny and your kids are really little, because you are pretty much pinned down by the unhappiest kid. I mean, that's just the most demanding.
Right.
But then as they grow, yeah, I mean, I think my point was we need to get better about having our happiness not be completely tied to the happiness of each of our kids. Otherwise, like you said, we'd be miserable. And
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then we talked about the dreaded car nap transfer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, while I was listening to that, I had so much empathy for everybody whose kid is like dropping a nap and or not even dropping a nap, but they're just dealing with the whole car nap situation.
Yeah.
But I will tell you, I don't have anything like really of value to share because I don't think I ever got it together. I feel like what I finally figured out the best, you know, time to cut off a kid's nap or get them out of the car before they started, you know, like in time to get them in bed or whatever. Like right. by the time I finally figured that out with one kid, they were like growing out of the nap entirely. And then I was on the next kid and their thing was completely different.
Right.
So I don't have much to say, except I do remember spending a lot of time in the car.
Yeah.
And I remember spending a lot of time going through these like complicated like algorithms in my head. And, you know, it's funny. I wonder sometimes, I remember being like really impressed by myself at one point, you know, within the last 5 years or so, and thinking like, wow, like I'm really good at being in a situation and visualizing like five different ways it could go, like anticipating and then like solving for each one separately.
Yeah.
And it's all because of, I think it's all because of naps. I think it's all because of like learning, like you sit there and you're like, oh, okay, so they've been napping for 5 minutes and going by history, that means that maybe if they sleep another 5 minutes, I might still be able to get them out of the car and get them right. in your bed. But if they don't do that, I need to have another like solution. Maybe I just take them out in their car seat and put the car seat somewhere. I mean, you go through these like complicated, you know, I don't even know, like equations to get the outcome you need. And then you fail over and over. So that teaches you something. I just feel like there's like this motherhood yeah. math going on at all times.
No, I think that's so true. And the other one thing I will add about naps and sleep is sometimes I think moms think they need to change something or put structure or put a schedule or have a system. And I always say about sleep, if you are not going crazy and you're cool with the way it's happening, and if the way it's happening is sometimes the baby sleeps in the car, sometimes they transfer, sometimes they don't, that if it's not making you miserable, you don't have to change anything. You don't need a right. schedule or a system. And I think sometimes moms sort of feel like they do. Whereas if you are never getting a moment to yourself because your baby's falling asleep in the car and then waking up on the way in and you're just at your wit's end, then that's the time to do something about it. Does that make sense? So like sometimes the chaos of napping babies and toddlers feels like, oh, I've got to fix this. I need a system. I need a, but you really don't. Sometimes you can just lean into the chaos unless it's making you crazy. Does that make sense at all?
You're like, totally right. And I also think that sometimes we tell ourselves we should be more on top of it, and that makes us crazier than like
right.
just writing something out.
Just writing
something
it out.
Might write itself in 30 days or
exactly.
2 months. And that's a long time, but you know, it'll also probably take that length of time for you to enact a new system.
Exactly.
With any kind of, you know, success anyway.
Exactly.
So yeah, I always took the ride it out approach almost always with parenthood, and it usually works. Not yeah. always, but
and if
what
you,
works all the time.
And if your mental health is suffering because of something, then that's a good time to be like, okay, something needs to change. We need a different right. schedule, a different system. But if it ain't broke, just lean in. I don't know. That's our new motto. Just lean in. Okay, so should we do a little struggle, discovery, success of our own?
Sure. I'll go first.
Okay.
And I'll make it brief because I think I talked about humidifiers longer than I meant
it's
to.
It's funny
which is
how
funny.
That happened.
I know, right? Okay. So when I got into this, I realized that my struggle and my success were like kind of the same.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So the struggle that I've been having lately is that I've realized that my schedule is kind of like unmanageable or unsustainable if anything goes wrong. So,
yes,
you know, like I leave no wiggle room for sickness. I don't have any wiggle room for joy.
Yeah, I hear you.
Just kidding. I enjoy myself. But like I didn't leave any room in my, you know, in my crazy packed life for like watching TV. And
yeah.
stuff like that. And I just get really resentful when enough yeah. time goes by and I yeah. haven't been able to do those things. And then
yeah.
when I know that if like tomorrow Clara can't find her shoes,
yeah.
That's going to throw everything off, then I get really frustrated. So that has been a struggle.
Yeah.
But then the success is that I proactively figured that out
mm-hmm.
and have been looking at making some really hard changes to the way we do things that will right that. And I think what I've learned throughout the years is that everybody falls off the wagon at some point
mm-hmm.
and loses track of what's important or sustainable or, you know, isn't doing their best job, isn't on as much as they could be.
Yeah.
But we always have an opportunity to stop and go, okay, well, what can I change? And it's easy when you're like spiraling downward.
Right.
And, you know, there have been days in the last couple of weeks where I have found myself in tears or mad at the wrong people. Like,
yep.
mad at someone who made a very legitimate request of me because it's just one more thing piling on that I can't deal with. But then that's a good reminder to me, like something is off and I need to take a look and what can I change? And that's what I'm doing right now. So I've made some real headway in the last couple of days with changing things about my work schedule that aren't working, changing things about the way about my financials that I have just ignored that weren't working. So lots of things are, you know, I'm in the process of making changes, and that's energizing in a way too, even if I won't see the effects right away. Yeah. So I guess that's a struggle and a success.
That is a struggle and a success. And one thing that struck me as you were talking is compared to a new mom struggle, which often our advice is hang in there, it gets better, or this is just the way it's going to be for a while. You were really able to identify the struggle and like have a lot of agency, and we don't always. I mean, not every struggle is just fixable, but I was just struck by kind of the difference between a struggle where in your phase of life versus when, you know.
But I will also say that if you are realizing, say you're like stuck in a phase and your baby's not sleeping or whatever, I think that choosing to lean into that is also taking agency.
Yes, you're right. No, you're totally
right.
You know,
like there's always something you can do. Always something.
I agree.
And if that thing is just like complaining to a friend and then deciding, you know what, I'm not going to try to fix this. I'm just going to let it be. That is also, or maybe figuring out some little dumb thing you can do for yourself to make it more bearable. That is also taking action.
Yep.
That's
absolutely.
Also, that's also a success along with the struggle. So
totally
I agree with you. But like, I think no matter what, I'm an action oriented person. So I'm always looking for the, what can I do to like, to not fix it, because I can't fix my situation either. It just is what it is. But there are things I can do to make it better or to make my reaction to it better.
Totally.
My discovery is just real quick. I got a new iPhone.
Nice.
It is the 8 Plus.
Nice.
It has an amazing camera.
I'm so jealous.
I didn't think I cared about cameras on my phone. But I will tell you what, I have really enjoyed taking some very great, like, crisp, beautiful.
Are you using that
well-lit
portrait feature? Have you tried that?
I've tried all the features now. And here's what's interesting. This phone is inspiring me to do things that I've never done before. Like try features that I never tried before. And one of the things that I'm actually really also loving about having my new iPhone is I got a pop socket. I don't know if you're familiar with it. They're like those little handles.
Okay, I can picture it, but explain to our listeners, because the first time
you
said it.
They're like a little sticky circle, and it sticks on the back of your phone, and then you pop the socket. Like, it pops out, and you can use it to hold the phone, and that's really important with the 8 Plus because it's enormous.
It's
and
big.
It weighs,
yeah.
Compared to my old phone, it weighs like a million pounds. And then it allows you to, it just makes it easier to like take selfies, to text. Like, it just makes like normal functions much easier.
Right.
And taking pictures is one of those that makes it much easier. And you can also like use it to kind of like as a stand to prop your phone up if you want to watch a video or
I've
something.
Seen that.
Yeah. So,
those
it's really
things
cool.
Are, that would be a great little stocking stuffer too.
Yeah, they're like about $10.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're available in a lot of places. Like I've gotten them at Target and I got them at a gift store. So.
Okay. And like the mall kiosks probably have them, all the ones that have like phone accessories.
Yeah.
And it's called a pop socket.
Pop socket.
Oh, okay. Yep. I had seen them. I didn't know what they were called. Okay. So mine are, my struggle is, remember how terrible group projects were when you were in school?
Oh, yeah.
Did you hate group projects?
I did.
Them. So the only thing worse that I have realized is group projects when it is your child involved in the group school project. We're just at like a very, Allegra's in fourth grade, and I feel like it's a very transitional age to where, I don't want to be involved in school projects at all. I don't.
Right.
I'm really hands off. I don't even really like homework at all. My kids either have not had a lot of homework or we've opted out of homework. So I lean very hands off, very kind of opposite of helicopter when it comes to schoolwork. And that's like philosophically where I come down is like, it's your project. I need you to learn from, you know, this process. However, fourth grade, they're nine. It's a little young to just be like, you're on your own. I mean, they can't coordinate getting together on their own. They're all subject to rides.
Right.
And we did, so they have, our school does these semester long projects and they can sometimes be in groups or in pairs. And most of the work is supposed to be done in class, but we've had a couple of outside of school get togethers and it's a group of four girls and they're all very nice and all the moms are very well-meaning, but oh, I just like, I don't feel like I know exactly how helpful and involved to be. My instinct is to just not be involved at all, but I don't think that's right. I think they need a little coaching.
Yeah.
Allegra needs my support so that she knows that, you know, I'm available. She needs to learn how to be in a group project. But the thing is, I didn't like group projects either. So I'm like totally not motivated to help. I really don't like when it becomes like a group text chain with the moms trying to then get involved. Yes. Like, So I don't know. Yeah. You don't have to solve it. It's just.
No, but this is one of those things that really frustrates me because, like, I know the point is, like, in your life, you're going to have to work with other groups.
Right.
Like, you're going to have to learn to work in a group. However, you will never be matched up so unevenly again in your life, I hope. Where, well, maybe you will. I don't know. In my experience, weakest links get fired. Yes. So it's. I've never been in a situation in my professional life where someone can just ride and skate by the way it worked in school. Yeah. And that used to make me nuts.
Yeah.
And then also just I like to do my own thing. I don't really like to be on other people's timelines. Like there was a whole bunch of stuff in that. And I feel you. I don't know. I think this is one of those things. I think Allegra, if she feels supported by you, can probably work a lot of this out on her own.
I think so, too. And I think they're not this is not something that grades like that. This is for the experience. They're doing it for the experience. They're learning a lot about how to research, how to work together. That's the educational goal is the process. It's not like there's a grade writing on this. I just I really have found myself sort of conflicted about this. I need to reread Jess Leahy's Gift of Failure because that I mean, that's the sort of like the inspiration call to let kids learn this stuff on their own and back off. I just feel like fourth grade is a little young to completely back off. And that's the struggle that I've had is, you know,
that is young.
How supportive to be or how involved. Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, a kid like Allegra is going to end up taking the brunt. Like she's going to end up with stuck,
right?
You know, with all the work. And she's maybe not in a place where she can advocate for herself. So,
right. So maybe that's my role then. I don't know. But I just am over it.
Like, maybe your role is just to listen and go, you know, the person really should have pulled their weight on that. Or, you know, sounds like you guys having a disagreement about this thing. Well, you know, is this the hill you want to die on?
To use our favorite phrase.
I just wanted to use that phrase. But like, I bet you someone in, and I'm not an Allegra type, but I think you kind of maybe are.
We have some similarities.
So whenever someone is a super high achiever, well, we've talked about this with the Enneagram. When you're a one, you want people to know when they're messing up.
Yeah, you just want everything to be done the right way. Yeah, and actually, Allegra, I don't think is like that with me.
No, you don't think
she is a people pleaser.
She's a people pleaser.
She's definitely a peacemaker.
Send her my way.
Yeah, exactly. But she's
That's a different kind of achievement and a very different motivator.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh man. Whole new episode.
You can't fix it. That's the takeaway for this one. We should move on to a success now.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to do a very quick discovery. That's next on my list, but it's super fast. Okay. Maybe you guys all know about this, but we get a real Christmas tree in our house. So we go get it at Home Depot. It's in its stand with water. I only discovered this 2 years ago, and it is it's a long watering funnel that you stick down in the basin, and it comes up through the tree. It's just PVC pipe painted dark green, has a little red funnel at the top, but you can stand at your regular standing height and pour water in, and the whole thing comes up. It's like waist high or hip high on me, and I pour it in there, but it's not noticeable because it almost blends in with the tree. Does that make sense the way I'm describing
it? Yeah, I think it does.
So I will post a picture. It's made by Handy Things, and they have them at Home Depot. I looked on Amazon, and it looks like they have them, but it's not on Prime. So I think it might be carried at Home Depot. But I was seriously crouching down and getting underneath a tree to water it. And we've lived in very warm, dry climates. So Christmas trees, they go dry fast.
Yeah.
So this is the easiest way to water your tree. And you no longer have to bend down and spill everything all over the floor. And it's $15.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it really, you don't even know it's there. It blends in with the tree. So, okay.
I have a feeling this year my cat's going to be drinking out of the Christmas tree thing. So I'll probably have to figure something out. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
And then my success is actually also school related, elementary school related, which is just a coincidence. But I have finally, after years, found a way to be involved at the kids' school that I really, truly like. And I am actually pretty involved. And you and I have done whole episodes about how much we hate field trips, class parties, like all the ways that we really don't love to be involved and don't feel guilty about it. But I took over organizing the volunteers for our school library this year. So at the beginning of the year, that looked like me getting trained on the checkout system, how to help kids check out books, and then recruiting about 7 or 8 volunteers and just creating a schedule for them. And so it was pretty, our school visits the library. We share a campus with another charter school and we share a library with them. So our school has library visitation sessions on Mondays and Fridays. So in the beginning of the year, it was a little bit time intensive because I was in there most Mondays and Fridays. But now that I have my little army of volunteers, I'm just overseeing the schedule, making sure they're all there. But it's, I think there's a couple of reasons why it's a good fit for me. The first one is books and reading and children, all of which right. I like. I like that I get to know each of the teachers because each teacher brings their kids to the library and it's a very like pleasant experience. Everybody likes yeah. to go to the library. The kids love to check out books. It's a fun break in their day. I do work with other volunteers, but it's a relatively small group. So it's not like a big committee. I don't have to, other than recruiting the 7 or 8 moms and dads that I did, I don't have an ongoing outreach role to the school, right. which I think is a good fit for me because I don't like having to ask people for money, ask people to do things, get people to sign up for stuff on an ongoing basis. So I really only had to kind of do that once. And I don't even really have to go in anymore unless one of my volunteers isn't able to make it. So it's like a really good fit. And when I do go in there, I love seeing the kids and I love, you know, recommending books and yeah. So if you have struggled to find a way to be involved at your school, or if you don't like traditional volunteer opportunities like field trips, hang in there because I feel really, it's really fun for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's it.
Great success.
Yes, success. All right.
Well, this has been a really fun episode. I've really loved I loved hearing you and Katie chat at length and then getting to weigh in on it. I feel like we should do this more often.
Yeah, it was really fun. And hopefully with all of our recording schedules matching up sometime, it would be fun to get on and do another three-way episode like we did with our breastfeeding. We did a breastfeeding episode where it was the three of us, and that was really fun. So we will put that on the goals for 2018 nice. As well. Okay, so everything we talked about will be at themomhour.com. This was episode 133. Head to the website and you'll find our sponsors and any things we mentioned, including humidifiers. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Bye.